gonna be just like senior year, except for funner.
Hey guys, I'm Kendra.
Hi, I'm Mercedes, and this week we're talking about the sports romance classic, Love and Basketball.
It really is a classic, but first, Mercedes, let's kick it off with our celebrity crush of the week. Who you crushing on this week, girl?
Oh my goodness, Kendra. So I'm crushing on Jin from BTS. I don't know if you're listening to BTS.
I love how much of a like boy band fan you are.
Oh yeah. Boy bands are my life. If you've never listened to BTS, I say give him a search. Jin is the oldest one. He loves to call himself worldwide handsome. And he's correct. He is correct.
Facts, 100%.
Exactly.
Oh, gosh. Okay, I got to listen to BTS. We did an episode when I was working at my old job. We did an episode on them. But I have not taken the time to listen to them. So apologies, BTS, if you're listening to this.
They're great.
Okay, Mercedes, ask me who I have a crush on this week.
Kendra, who's your crush this week?
Okay, wait. First of all, have to give a shout out to my crush of the week, Paul Mescal from Normal People, because it's his birthday today, actually.
Happy birthday, Paul Mescal.
Happy birthday, Paul. So I left Sligo this morning, actually, in Ireland. And I went to Sligo because Normal People is my favorite limited series, and I really feel like it changed my life. I just relate to the character of Marianne so much, just like the tumultuous relationship she has with her family, getting teased in high school, and then finding herself in college. She has this line there that's just like, typical me, went to college and got pretty. And I was like, I feel like that was me. I went to college and I found myself. Like, I finally found a place where I fit in and I was good at it. And I've been rewatching Normal People because being in Sligo and watching Normal People just hits different.
Oh my God.
It was just amazing to be there. So Paul is my celebrity crush of the week. And also, again, happy birthday.
I love him and his thighs. You know, he actually, my best friend, they both went to like the same theater camp or something together. And I guess he's always just been like cool and hot.
Which like does not surprise me. But also, I hope he's a nice person.
I believe he's nice. I feel it. Like, he just seems kind.
Yeah. I mean, Irish people just tend to be incredibly kind people anyway. Yeah. So would not be surprised. All right, guys. So we are going to move over to the TLDR. This is where we summarize the movie for anyone who has not seen it. Also, if you have not seen Love and Basketball, spoilers are coming, but you can stream it on HBO Max.
Yeah.
Take away, Mercedes.
Okay, so this movie is broken down into four quarters, just like a basketball game. The first quarter begins in 1981, when 11-year-old Monica Wright, played by Kyla Pratt, moves to Los Angeles, right next door to Quincy McCall, played by Glendon Chapman. She dreams of being the first woman in the NBA, and he dreams of being just like his NBA-playing dad, played by Dennis Haysbert. The two become rivals on the basketball court quickly after meeting, and their interactions almost always end with bickering, even after their first kiss. Then we jump to the second quarter. They're both seniors in high school, stars of their basketball team at Crenshaw High. Quincy is now played by Omar Epps. He's popular. He's getting so much attention from college scouts, while Monica, played by Sanaa Lathan, is fighting to get any playing time. They are still bickering neighborhood friends, and she secretly still has bottled up feelings for Quincy. And after a school dance, Quincy's views on Monica change, and their night turns romantic after they both share that they're going to USC to play college basketball, which cuts to the third quarter. They're freshmen in college. Quincy is the starting freshman basketball player, while Monica's working 10 times harder just to get off the bench. After Quincy discovers his dad's infidelity, he closes off, cheats on her, drops out of school to go to the NBA. Then we go to the fourth quarter. We're in 1993 now. Monica is playing international pro basketball in Barcelona, and Quincy is engaged to Kira, played by Tyra Banks, and he's really struggling to play on the Lakers. When he finally gets playing time, he tears his ACL. About this time, Monica quits basketball and moves home. They actually reunite briefly at the hospital, and that's where she hears about the engagement. Monica's really frustrated in trying to manage life without basketball. She's grappling with her bitterness toward her mother, who actually ends up helping her realize that she can't stop fighting for what she loves and who she loves. So that's when Monica challenges him to a game of one-on-one to win his heart. The two play in the most high-stakes game ever, which ends with Monica and Quincy together again. Cut to 1998 at the end. Monica is shown playing in the WNBA for the LA Sparks, and Quincy is there cheering her on with their daughter on his lap on the sidelines. What a great ending.
Love it. Perfect ending to a perfect movie. This is the 2000 directorial debut of Gina Prince-Bythewood, who also wrote this movie, and most notably directed Beyond the Lights, which, first of all, I just want to give a shout out to Gugu Mbatha-Raw, who is one of the most underrated actresses in the industry. Gina also directed The Secret Life of Bees and the Netflix film Old Guard, starring Charlize Theron. This movie was produced by Spike Lee. And I'm sorry, but if you don't know who that is, I really can't help you.
Yep.
Yeah.
So there are so many fun facts and interesting industry facts about this movie, right? So I actually read that the director saw over 700 people for the role of Monica because Spike Lee, the producer, thought the lead actress should have actual basketball skills. And so Gina interviewed like actresses, athletes, people who have never acted before. And funny enough, Sanaa Lathan had never played basketball before this movie. So she worked with a basketball coach for about 2 months.
Yeah. I love when they show her like running onto the court with the sparks and everyone is so much taller than her. Yeah. It's so funny. You're like, I know. The fact that she learned basketball for this role too is so impressive just because like, I mean, it's not an easy sport. It's not an easy thing to just like pick up.
I know, but yeah. I think that's like, that's the case with a lot of actresses. You know, I remember Natalie Portman learned ballet for Black Swan. Definitely. And Margot Robbie learned how to ice skate for I, Tonya. And I just think it's so interesting when, as an older person, you can just completely learn a new skill like that. Because I think Sanaa was already like at least 20 or 30 in this movie. So,
and so Gina Prince-Blythe, her screenplay was actually turned down by like multiple studios. And then she ended up going to the Sundance Institute lab program where they held a reading. And that's what got Spike Lee's attention. And that's when he was like, OK, my production company, we're going to pick you up. We're going to do this, which is so impressive. It just shows like, look for these programs when you have a screenplay out there and you want to get it out there, like really bring it in, collaborate.
Yeah. And also just an encouraging word to any aspiring filmmakers. Don't ever give up. You're going to get like a million rejections. But it just takes one yes. Do you remember that meme of Lady Gaga during her press tour?
You only need one person in the room.
99 people can say no. You just need the one yes. That's what I'm reiterating right now.
Oh, I love it. Also, if you're wondering why Monica, when she's 11, was like so focused on being the first woman in the NBA, it's because the WNBA hadn't even been founded until 1996. And this movie starts off in 1981. So that's a 15-year period where she's just like reaching for professional basketball in the world of men. So it's tough.
I can't even believe I was alive when the WNBA was founded.
We were both alive. It's shocking.
It's shocking. I don't know how I feel about that. Just another thing too that I found really interesting was the scene where Quincy pushes Monica and she gets a scar on her face when they're little. That scene was actually added in because Sanaa Lathan already has a scar on her face, so they want to kind of match it.
Continuity. Yeah. That is really clever. Also, Kyla Pratt, she was so popular at this time. Like, the Proud Family, One-on-One. I think
One-on-One!
Yes! I think both those shows started, like, a year after this movie came out, and she had already been in, like, Dr. Dolittle. People knew her. Mm-hmm. Also, did you know that Lathan and Epps were actually dating when they were filming this movie?
Yeah, I read that.
They met when they were on the set of The Wood, and they actually didn't let anyone on set of Love and Basketball know until they were both cast in their roles, just so, like, it wouldn't mess up anything for them.
Oh, so that's why their chemistry is so palpable. That's why this is a cult classic of the Black community, because they already had that love there. You could just feel it. I absolutely love that. Yeah. I think it's really cool, you know, like you were saying, they acted together in The Wood. When actors act together in content, multiple times. So Alfre Woodard, who plays Monica's mother, and Sanaa Lathan have actually played mother and daughter in three different movies.
Oh,
and that was
goodness.
So cool.
Oh, I love that. I never knew that. I could go on and on about this movie. I'm so excited to talk about it more. It's been such a staple for me my whole life. So
absolutely. Let's jump into Time Capsule, guys. This is just a time where we try to reflect on where we were at the time that this movie came out. So again, this movie came out in the year 2000. Mercedes, how old were you? What were you doing?
Oh, my goodness. So I was 4 when this movie came out.
Oof.
So this movie is actually really special to me because I grew up playing sports. I will say I was never good at sports, but I did grow up playing sports. And for me, like, this movie combined, like, the genres that both my parents loved. My dad loves a sports movie and my mom loves a romance. So I grew up watching it with them. It always reminds me of, like, basketball practices with my dad as my coach, or, like, watching games with my parents. We would always go to, like, the college games because New Mexico doesn't have, like, a professional team. And then this movie always reminds me of my, like, magenta and white Carmelo Air Jordan sneakers that I got when I was 7. Every year my dad would get me a new pair of basketball sneakers, and he would not let me wear them off the court until after the season, even as, like, a 6-year-old. And then, like, once the season was over, I was like, yes, I can sport my cool sneakers around. Like, they were always so fresh. Oh my God, I loved them.
So yeah, that is so
reminds me.
Gosh, you know, I won't talk about the year 2000, but I'll tell you around the time that I know for a fact I probably watched this movie for the first time. Because this was just this was a hard time in my life, like reflecting back on it now. So I bet you anything the first time I saw this movie was probably around 2005, 2006, which was when I was in eighth grade. Because during that time, I was just getting teased a lot at school for quote unquote acting white. So I know this is a podcast. You guys can't see me, but I am, in fact, a black woman. And I got teased a lot for acting white. Like kids would say I talked white. I acted white. They would call me Oreo, like black on the outside and white on the inside. And it was just so frustrating for me. So I remember very consciously starting to be like, oh, I'm going to act more black, which, by the way, that does not mean anything whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like that, you cannot act as a certain race.
Exactly.
And so I remember I started watching BET every single day, and that was kind of my way of combating the negative stigma of like kids making fun of me because I was white. I grew up in a predominantly white area. And so I would get out of school at like 2 p.m. and I'd go home and watch BET until like 9 or 9:30 p.m. Single day, like my entire eighth grade year. It's so funny, Mercedes, because I still remember like the schedule, the lineup of BET during that time. So from like 2 to 4 was nonstop music videos. And then 4 to 6 was Rap City with Big Tigger. And then 6 to 7:30 was 106 and Park with Free and AJ.
Oh my
God.
And
then 7:30, yeah. At like 7:30, they always played a BET, like a movie. And I'm absolutely positive that was the first time I ever saw Love and Basketball was during that time. So
I think it's so special, like the movies that become comfort watches in those really vulnerable times where you're struggling a lot emotionally, and like these movies really pull through, especially this one comes in as like just such a safe space.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like there are a lot of black rom-coms that hopefully we'll talk about in future episodes that I know for a fact I watched around this time period that ended up shaping my, not only my life, but my identity as well as a black woman. So I'm very, very grateful for them.
Yeah. This is also like just a movie for any time. If I'm somewhere where there's cable and it's on, we're watching it. Like it's just one of those movies, you know?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Do you remember who you had a crush on during this time?
Okay, so I don't remember who I had a crush on. I do remember when I was 4. This is when I discovered NSYNC, which started my love of boy bands, which is no secret. I love boy bands. I was also at this time obsessed with like Grease and The Mask of Zorro and like Titanic and the Selena movie. So I was an only child for 11 years, so I watched a lot of movies with my parents, just whatever they wanted to watch. So I was watching like movies that probably other 4-year-olds weren't watching, but plus like the Disney classics and all of those. So I don't really have a crush. Do you remember a crush?
Okay. This wasn't a crush on a person, but this was a crush on a career, essentially.
Ooh.
So the year 2000 was actually the year that I started performing and acting. I remember I acted in my church's play. I was a sheep.
Amazing.
That was a time I decided like, okay, I'm going to school in New York. Like that was it. And I was like, you know, I was like, I'm going to go to Juilliard. I'm going to be on Broadway. It's so funny that I made this decision when I was 8 years old, and I actually did end up going to school in New York. I didn't go to Juilliard, but I went to Syracuse. Shout out SU, best school in the nation. But it's just so funny how, you know, the choices that you make at such a young age really define you and really shape you. And I'm curious if there are any big decisions that you made when you were a kid that just like have molded you and affected you now as an adult that you remember.
Definitely. So when I was younger, I always wanted to be a detective and a movie director.
Yes.
Because for one, I'm nosy. And then the other part of me, I love to make up stories. So I always wanted to make movies out of like the mysteries I would solve. And that was like my dream life. And then now I'm a researcher because I'm also nosy. And I also just like most of the research I do is in film and television. And I also like creatively write, and like directing is still a major goal for me at some point. And it's something that I'm like actively working towards. So I think those things stick with you. I think they kind of leave you a little bit in those like middle school years of insecurity. And then they come back and you're like, yeah, no, I'm doing this for like young Mercedes because she's
exactly
it.
And I think too it's really powerful when you write it down at that age too, because I remember like writing in my diary I talked about in the first episode, just being like, I want to go to school in New York, I want to be a performer, I want to do this. And It has power. It holds power. So anyone listening to this who has kids, make sure you have them write down their goals, write down their dreams, because it'll be nice to reflect back on them when they're older.
It's always so fun.
All right, guys, it's time for the Rom-Com Hall of Fame. But first, of course, Mercedes, we always have to roast this film. Now, this film came out 22 years ago. So tell me, in your opinion, what didn't age well for you?
Okay, so I will preface this with saying that I don't have a lot to roast. I have a lot to rave about. Mm. But I think the hardest parts for me are like the how this movie unpacks like womanhood and like the double standards within like gender on screen, especially since this movie has so much to do with athletics. Yeah. And all of these things are still happening. But without those concepts, this movie wouldn't be what it is, and it wouldn't carry the depth that it does. So I'm grateful for that. But it's also just so frustrating to watch it on screen because you're like, oh, my God, I want to pull my hair out.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's so funny because the roast for me, it's just such a conundrum because it's something that I don't like, but also like something that we need. So for me, mm-hmm. I didn't really like necessarily the representation of the mothers in this movie. I understand it was a sign of the times, but they're both like rich stay-at-home moms who just aren't appreciated. One is constantly being cheated on. The other one's value isn't seen by her husband.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's annoying too, because during this time, there was a lot of controversy because Halle Berry became the first Black actress to win an Oscar for Best Actress in a Leading Role for Monsters Ball. And that movie came out in 2002. And there was kind of a lot of controversy around that because she played a prostitute. And we just felt like, okay, the only time Hollywood wants to reward Black women with accolades is when they're playing this type of role. So for these two women, for these two Black women to be playing rich stay-at-home moms, it's like, yeah, well, we kind of needed that, right? Because Black women at the time were just playing slaves or maids or whatever. Like, there was this whole stigma around who Black women could play. Mm-hmm. But, like, rich Brentwood stay-at-home moms was not one of those archetypes. So it's kind of like a roast and also kind of like, well, yeah, it's nice to have that kind of like representation as well, you know?
Yeah. No, definitely. I think just in this movie, there are so many takes on gender and femininity and womanhood that are just like frustrating truths.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, it's so much more than just like a love story between athletes. Like, this is a coming of age story. And this is like, you're really seeing these characters grow. And without these elements, like without Monica's mom being kind of like the antithesis of what Monica was, she wouldn't have the drive to go forth as an athlete as strong as she did, because she really used that as her motivation versus Quincy, who wanted to be just like his dad. Monica really didn't want to be anything like her mom, and then realizes at the end, like, oh, actually, like, I need to give my mom a lot more credit. Mm-hmm. But without that, you wouldn't have Monica doing what she does.
Mm-hmm.
So exactly. It's a tough one. Yeah, like our criticisms are necessary.
Yeah, but also I feel like it is something to note that this movie does age very well. And when we're talking about things that age well, can we talk about how every freaking actor in this movie has aged perfectly?
Oh,
like,
gosh,
fine wine.
Beautiful.
Something out of like a storybook. Sanaa Lathan is 50 years old, looks straight up gorgeous. Like, yeah. Omar Epps still looks good. Alfre Woodard, like, everyone still looks. Dennis Haysbert, oh my gosh. All at me. My goodness. So I love that. The whole cast just like still looks absolutely incredible. They're all still working too. You all still see them in a lot of stuff. Also, I just want to praise this movie for being very progressive with their, you know, tones of feminism that's going on in this movie. Just like giving a Black woman big and bold dreams and to chase after them. It didn't have to do with the man. It had to do solely with like what she wanted, what she was passionate about. That is huge. That is huge.
And also, like, the way it just surprises you at the end, where the whole time you're expecting Quincy to really, like, flourish in the NBA, and then it turns it on its head, and you're seeing Monica out there and him on the sidelines cheering her on. It was so wonderful to see as, like, a child, and it's still so fulfilling to see now. And the fact that, like, this isn't a story of harm or, like, the story of real sadness. This is a story of two people coming into their own and finding the people that they love, and also like fighting for the thing they love, which is like their sport and their passion. And it's just so lovely. I also just like love how vastly different this movie is compared to other movies about athletes, because every sports scene in this movie really drives the plot in a way that a lot of sports movies don't, where this movie isn't about the final game where the buzzer is going to go off and you're waiting for that big like cheer from the game they're playing is to show their emotions, their attitude, and their behavior. Like, you're driving character through this, and it builds on character. and you're never taken out of the plot, like the game scenes. Mm-hmm. Like, it really is just building on it to show the personality. Like, you're seeing Monica's frustration because there's so much on her plate. And, like, she feels, like, you can feel it on her. And you see it versus, like, Quincy, who is consistently getting praise. And I don't know, like, I just love that. And that's such a gift from our director, our writer and director, you know, like, there's so much emotion depicted through these subtle nonverbals on the court. And like, without her gaze and her pen on this movie, we wouldn't have had that, because she herself was an athlete. So exactly. She understands it, and she understands those emotions and everything. I could go on and on. I'm sorry. No. I just want to rave forever.
I love it. I love it. Snaps to Gina Prince-Bythewood for being amazing at writing and directing this movie. That's iconic, and you got Mercedes rambling. I want to ask you, though, Mercedes, what sport, if any, would you want to fall in love over?
Oh, my God. I mean, okay, basketball, definitely, because I love basketball. It's my favorite sport. Mm-hmm. It's the most entertaining to watch because it goes so fast. Like, I understand football, soccer, but it, like, takes so much longer. They're such long games. And I think basketball, like, it's such a contact sport, too. So, like, that's what kind of makes this movie so much more sensual, even the scenes mm-hmm. that aren't, like, really, like, sensual scenes mm-hmm. and intimate scenes. They're on the court, and, like, just the way the bodies move and the way that camera work follows them, like, it just mm-hmm. feel, like, you feel it, and you feel the tension there. Mm-hmm. And I guess basketball, but also, like, I've been crushing on a lot of skateboarders for the past year, so
you have. You have. Yes, you have.
What about you?
Okay, I think if I could insert myself into any rom-com sports movie, it would be Step Up. I want to fall in love over a dance.
Oh, my God. I didn't even think about Step Up. Oh, that is such a good one.
Oh,
really? Every time I watch Step Up, I think I could do it. And, like, I used to dance when I was younger, but, like, I'm not any good. But there I am at the end of the movie. I'm like, I could do it. Or, like, the end of the second one where they're doing the chest breath. Yeah. I'm like, I could do it. I could definitely do it.
I always see myself as the lead character in, like, a dance movie. But I think also, like, figure skating, too. I don't know. Something where it's like close contact and you guys are intimate. Yeah. Like that's a sport I would want to fall in love over. Also, when I think of traditional sports like soccer and basketball and like maybe even softball, I can't do any of that.
I will say, if you ever catch me willingly breaking a sweat to win a man, please just sit me down and make me reflect on my life choices, because something is deeply wrong with me at that point in my life.
Mercedes, I got you. Don't even worry about it. Don't even worry about it. Oh my gosh. Speaking of men, I always love this quote in the movie. Monica says,
"You jump in some guy's face, you talk smack, and you get a pat on your ass. But because I'm a female, I get told to calm down and act like a lady. I'm a ball player."
I love that quote.
I love it. And it's the force in which she says it, too. Like, you feel it. And you just feel all of her frustration. Because also, Quincy, like, has these expectations that he's supposed to be supported by her the whole time, where mm-hmm. that's not really given back to her, even before they're dating. Mm-hmm. And it's not really given to her through most people, just through her passion. So I feel for her.
No. Do you have a favorite quote in this movie?
Okay, my favorite quote is,
"I'll stay another basketball thing."
And they say it, it's said twice. And it's said during their cute little dorm basketball, strip basketball game, one-on-one. And then it's said at the end when they're playing the game. And, like, it's the most stressful, tense moment because you really think that he, like, does not want to be with her. And she's losing. And then my second favorite quote is said, and that's
double or nothing
right at the end, because she loses the one-on-one game.
Mm-hmm. No, because I love when she's like,
"I'll play you."
What?
"One game, one-on-one."
For what?
Your heart.
For your heart. You're like, yes.
But I will also say, okay, my last favorite quote of this movie, Monica and Sidra are in Spain and they run into each other. And Sidra's like,
"Them Italian boys, they love them some black women. They can't get enough of me."
And I cannot confirm or deny this movie may have been the reason Italy was my very first solo travel trip.
Just hell yeah. You're like, I need to test this theory.
I need to test this theory, exactly. So if this movie popped up on your Tinder feed, would you swipe left or right?
I'm always swiping right forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you?
100%. But that's because, like, representation matters so much. And again, another message to any aspiring filmmakers listening right now, please always remember representation is so important. And this is just such a cult classic within the Black community. It just shows an independent young Black woman and her strengths and her goals. And that's so admirable. It just shows that love also never truly fades. So I am always forever swiping right.
Yes. We love seeing Monica just get everything she wants and deserves. Like, it is the most fulfilling thing.
Exactly. But it's also the hard work that she puts in behind it, right? Exactly. It's not just handed to her. She works her butt off to get these things. It just shows, again, another message of don't give up. Like, stay at it. You got this. All right, guys, we're going to jump into couples therapy. Mercedes and I just like to play therapists and give advice to the characters on how they can improve their relationship. And I'm curious to hear what you think, Mercedes. Like, what advice would you give to Quincy and Monica if they were sitting in your chair, your therapy chair right now?
So something I really appreciate about this movie is how it takes its time, and you really get to feel how much time goes on, and you see these characters grow and learn about themselves and learn how to express themselves. But really, like, I want to see better communication between the two. These are two people who hold back a lot. And yes, they share the same language of basketball, but they really don't speak their truth as often as I think they should. And even when they do, it's like timely, I guess. Like, it's always like years later or months later. Like, I want to hear you talk about this now and like really have deeper conversations that aren't like built in this like hostility or frustration because someone's not coming through to you in ways that you didn't even express that you need them to.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to preface my advice by saying I really don't think anyone should be with someone from the time they're 11. Because I just think you turn into a completely different person. And that's just really hard to grow together. And love is already hard enough. So I think it was actually really good for them to take a 5-year break and go and live their own separate lives and kind of develop on their own as people. And so I feel like my advice for Monica and Quincy would be to always keep falling in love with the different versions of yourselves. So I love that at the end we see Monica as a big basketball star, but that won't be forever, right? Everyone will continue to grow and continue to change. And I've said it once, Mercedes, and I will say it again over and over. All a relationship is, all love is saying yes every single day, saying, yes, I'm going to be there for you. Yes, I'm going to love you. Yes, I'm going to support you. And I just hope for Monica and Quincy that they can continue to make that decision every day with each version of themselves that they encounter.
Yes. There's also the topic of cheating that comes in here. We need Quincy to not cheat anymore.
This is true. Yeah. Okay. So when we're talking about communication, cheating is never the answer for lack of communication.
Yes.
You should always talk about your feelings. But yeah, he absolutely did cheat on Kira with Monica at the end because he was still with her and he hadn't called off the wedding of the engagement or anything.
Exactly. And I don't know, like, I want these two to just like keep flourishing. So I'm just like, do not just like have faith in each other and like trust each other with your emotions.
100%. What do you think their love languages are, Monica and Quincy?
Okay, so definitely this movie's rooted in quality time. But I think Quincy gives a lot of words of affirmation to Monica because everything he says, she really takes to heart. And like Monica responds and really takes it seriously. Like any of his criticism of her on the court, he really like is honest with her and she takes that in and like really lets it sink in. I think he attempts acts of service and really performs romance in a way that emulates who he thinks his dad is. Mm-hmm. But I think him giving words to Monica is most beneficial and like the thing that he's best at, but he definitely needs quality time and acts of service, I'd say.
I agree with you. I definitely think he needs quality time, but I also think he gives physical touch. And I feel like every time, you know, that scene where they're like walking out of the quad and they like, you know, he pulls her in close and they fall on the grass together. I just feel like he's constantly touching her in some way. So I feel like, you know, I think Quincy gives physical touch, but he does need quality time because if we think about it, the whole reason Quincy was upset with Monica was because he felt like she wasn't there for him when he was going through the stuff with his dad. And so he needs quality time. He needs to see her. He needs to just have that physical support there. And then with Monica, I think she actually gives words of affirmation, but I also feel like she needs that back because Quincy did not do a good job of communicating with her. And she needs to hear the honest truth to know that she's loved. Like, words need to be spoken very clearly to her. Like, Monica, I'm done with you. Or Monica, I love you and I need you to do this. Like, I feel like she's not very good at reading cues. And so you need to be direct with her. And so I hope that Quincy is able to give that back to her.
Yeah, I think he also really needs acts of service too, because he really does want to feel chosen. And that's like his main thing. And I think acts of service and quality time really blend together well with him. And also, like, what's the ultimate act of service? Is like fighting on the court, like the best way she knows how for his love. Like, yeah. That is the ultimate proof. Like, I'm here for you, even though you're engaged to somebody else. Like, really laying it all out there. And I think she's really hesitant with service because she also doesn't want to fall into the same cycle that she's seen her mom with her dad. So I think that's something that she works in. She, like, learns more about herself. And, like, I think they just learn more about what they need throughout. But it's interesting. They cover a lot.
They cover a lot, exactly. So, all right, we've given our advice, where said is, if this couple did not take our advice, do you think they'd still be together in 5 years?
Yes, these two are together. Like, they have to be. I just think at the end, when you see him holding their baby, like waving at her on the court, I'm like, yes, these two are together forever. I'm like, oh my God, like, he's just the dad. Like, that's like the perfect role. And she's out there killing it, playing professional basketball. They get what they want because he ultimately really just desires emotional support. Yeah. And I think just like that stability of a partner. And she desires to be out there playing basketball, and they do that together. And oh my gosh, I love seeing their family. It makes it so happy.
It is very cute. I do think they are together in 5 years. I think they are just so authentically themselves when they're with each other. And that's such a comfortable feeling, Mercedes. I feel like a lot of people have a hard time finding in a partner, just someone who they can be so authentically themselves with. And so when you do find that person, make sure you hang on to them with all you got.
It's also go ahead.
No. I was going to say that it feels like something, just to tie it back to normal people, something Marianne says in one of the episodes is that she feels like she's constantly trying on different characters with the boyfriend that she's with in there. And I just feel like that's something that maybe a little bit of us can all relate to, of just being with a person who we feel like we always have to be a different person around. So when you find that one person that you can just be yourself 100% around, like, that's really special. That's all I want to say.
I also think, like, it is really special that they found that with people who, I don't know, they connect at 11 years old. And that's such an insecure time. And to find, like, trust and, like, find people who love you for you in a time that's, like, rooted, like, you can, like, trace your whole history together. Like, that's so crazy to me because they're really... You're really trusting everyone's own individual evolution as they grow. And it's also like such an embarrassing cringe time to fall in love with somebody. And she says it. She's like, I've been in love with you since I was 11 years old. And that just says so much. And I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think. I'm like, wow, could I love anybody I knew at 11? And I'm like, no, not any of those 11-year-old boys I knew.
Should I remember if I even remember any of the boys I knew at 11?
I wish I could block them out of my memory.
All right, guys. We like to talk about Heartthrob, where we just gush about our favorite person in the movie. And I'm curious, Mercedes, of the people in this movie, who would you take home to meet to your family, to introduce to your friends?
I'm taking Quincy. He's such a good guy. And he's also just like gorgeous, like so beautiful. And he's an athlete, which is just like adds a whole other thing. I don't know. I love an athlete. But like, he does seem like the type to only really open up to people who he's known for so long. So I think that's why like it is jarring to see him engaged to Kira, because it's like, how long have you been together? What's the depth of this? Because I can't picture his personality like meeting me. And then I don't know, like he just seems so closed off to new people in a different way. And I think that's why, like, he's so strong with Monica. So I couldn't see him really, like, putting himself out there with, like, currently. I don't know. If you were going to date him, I don't know if he'd be as open.
So I feel like there aren't a lot of options in this movie. And the only reason I'm not going with the obvious choice of Quincy is because I cannot stand how cocky he is. It is just not my vibe. It is not who I am at all. It is not the type of company I like to keep. So instead, I'm going to go with Monica's sister, Lena, who is played by Regina Hall. Just because, like, I love that she could braid, and I always have my hair in a protective style, and so she'd really come in handy. And I just love Regina Hall anyways, so she's who I would introduce to my friends.
How can you not love Regina Hall?
I know, she's great. Shout out Regina Hall. We love you. All right, guys, it's time to play Marry, Screw,
Kill.
All right, guys, we like to talk about who would marry, who would screw, who would kill. Here is the set, Mercedes. Quincy, Zeke, or Jason, who is Monica's homecoming date.
Oh my goodness. This is hard. I think I'm going to marry Quincy.
Okay.
Maybe I'll screw Zeke and I'll kill Jason.
You're going to be surprised, Mercedes. I 100% agree with you.
Oh my God, really?
Your face, you're so excited.
I really didn't, because you were looking at me like I was crazy.
I like to throw you off. That's what I like to do. Yeah, I would marry Quincy. I would screw Jason. And I would kill Zeke, because we do not stand for a cheater. All right. We are not out here for cheaters.
Oh my gosh, you guys, you heard it here first, guys. Me and Kendra, we're the same. We're married to kill this week. We've
the
done
very
it.
First time. All right, guys, before we wrap up, we always love to bring in a pop culture moment. And I just want to say, like, something that's so interesting is you see Sanaa Lathan now as a 50-year-old, and she looks exactly the same as she does in this movie.
She really
but
does.
If you're curious to see how beautiful Sanaa Lathan still is, you can see her on this latest season of Succession, which is also streaming on HBO Max. So after you're done watching Love & Basketball on HBO Max, you can head over to Succession and see her. And also, if we're talking about Black rom-coms, I saw that Sanaa Lathan will be starring in the TV adaptation of The Best Man, which is another classic Black rom-com that I love. And it's starring two of the most beautiful men I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. Tay Diggs and Morris Chestnut.
Oh, gorgeous.
Love them.
Gorgeous.
Absolutely so gorgeous. It's funny too, because when I think of Omar Epps now, so I used to work at the network Stars, and we had a show there called Power, and I'd get to go to all the events and stuff because I was one of the few Black employees, and I would always ask to go to the events because I liked that cast. And Omar Epps is actually in the new Power saga called Raising Kanan, and I'm so mad that I like just missed him, and I won't be able to see him at the events because I don't work anymore. But I think that's so cool. So if you guys are interested in seeing Omar Epps now, go head over to Stars, watch Raising Kanan.
Yes. Also, Love & Basketball was just added to the Criterion Collection last September, which is so major for all you cinephiles out there. So you can get the DVD, and it comes with so many extra bonus interviews and all this stuff. I'm definitely going to get it because I just need it for my shelf. I love it so much. I was so excited when they announced it, because I was like, oh my goodness. Because usually, like, see all these off-the-cuff random art films, and then this to be there, I was like, yes. I love it. They're speaking to me directly.
Exactly.
Also, so a lot of recent interviews with Sanaa Lathan about Love & Basketball, like for the anniversary or something like that, they'll kind of twist her words around and claim that she had an awful time on set, or like hates the movie, because she stated how challenging the audition process was, like going against these real athletes. But she's never said she hated the movie. She was exhausted from the audition. So please, if you're out there and you're writing these headlines for clickbait, please stop, because you're misinterpreting her quotes. She's never done nothing but rave about this movie. So
yeah, I've never heard anything negative come from this movie.
Exactly. And speaking on that, like, this movie has inspired so many creatives that like we admire and who inspire all of us today, like Issa Rae. She said in multiple interviews how this movie made such a huge impact on her. And it's one of the main reasons that she started telling stories and creating in general. So, like, without this movie, like, where would we be without Insecure and, like, without Issa Rae and all of the more, all the other works she's done, all her other projects, and so many more creatives out there. Like, that's why inclusivity and representation matter so much, because then you get so many other stories from that.
100%. Said it before, we'll say it again. Representation matters.
Yes.
But listeners, we would love to know, you know, what movie shows a proper representation of the Black community or whatever community you're a part of. Tell us, do you love Love & Basketball? What sport would you love to fall in love through? You can slide to our DMs at MeetCue. Again, I have been Kendra. You can find me on Instagram and TikTok at Kenta in Hollywood.
Yes, and I've been Mercedes. You can find me at MercedesGB11. And if you're looking for new rom-coms, follow MeetCute wherever you listen to podcasts, and follow MeetCute on all socials everywhere. Bye, guys.
We'll see you next week.